I wanna be the best in the game, invest in my name. Check no restraints, I'm obsessed with the pain. I ingest, I retain, assess and I change. Possessed by the thought I'll be free one day from society's restraints. Money, clout and fame, a disease, a plague. We all love to hate, have to play the game, have to make a name. All our insecurities are on display.
This is war with the enemy. Think that it was meant to be. Living in a time where disease is...
Hello listener and welcome to another episode of Tactical Awareness. It's season 1, episode 25, and we are back with another faction takedown. We skipped a week. And we are going to continue this series until it's done. Three factions we've done our full, like, breakdowns for. We figured we would do the anti-breakdown, the ARO, if you will, for sort of, like, seeing what maybe the potential strengths are, things to look out for, and things potentially you have in your arsenal to take that faction down. So let's jump in directly with Owen and Dan. We're having a debate about, geez, what's the loose horseshit that we started this one with? I think it was a debate about packaging your collection and how some companies are better at parsing their product to retailers and others. So you can basically just come in midway through that and we'll get this going.
I mean, I'm pandemic resistant too, right? The stronger your IP brand is, the more people buy you just for the physical, like, attributes. You can sell lots of Wolverines and lots of X-Men when they come out, no matter what, just because it's those characters.
Yeah, but somebody's gonna know. Like, what I mean to say is, like, compared to the Malifaux, where you're like, Rasputina, is that a character? Is that a leader? What am I looking at here? And then the other person's like, this is Captain America. Well, yeah. I saw him on television.
I think you're right. I think it makes it, well, and it means that your product needs to be structured, like you said, in a way where you can look at, you can understand, this is where I start, this is the thing that adds on, yada yada yada, which I think it does really well.
If you start with the Black Widow pack, you know you started with the sidekick.
Yeah, exactly. And if you start with Operation Black Wind, you know you've got terrain and dice and measuring sticks and, hey, look, this is the whole game in a box, and then I can have what I want. Yeah, there's gotta be like an
started with the Clampets opposed to starting with the big hats, you know. Wait,
you're using words that don't mean anything outside of the ecosystem you're talking about, Dan.
I know. Shit, I did it on purpose.
Hi everybody, welcome to another episode of Tactical Awareness. This is season 1, episode 25. We skipped a week last week. We all got I got busy. So we skipped a week. No apologies. You get this when you get this. We try to be weekly, and we missed a week last week, but we're going to come back with another faction takedown. So it's taking them down a notch. This time we're going to pick on Dan.
Yeah, let's take down the faction that nobody's worried about.
Yeah. I think they should be. I think they got some good shit. I think they got some decent hitters.
I think they're way at the, when we went to Edmonton, one guy's like, I heard you're a decent, you know, miniature player. Why did you pick 012? And I was like,
It was picked for me.
But also, yes, it was picked for me. But also, like, I think they have all the tools they need. I was like, I don't see anything really lacking too much. So
I think with the Sarco and the, like, baby beta troopers now,
Starmada lacked some things.
But yeah, but I'm just saying that those missing pieces have, like, added a bunch of legs to 12 for sure.
Oh, for sure. And we will talk about that.
We will talk about that. But first we should talk about the
Rage.
Today brought to you by Rage Shadow Legends. Could you imagine if we got sponsored by Raid Shadow Legends? Oh my god, it'd be amazing. We would be the least coherent.
I would do the same thing that Chilling Smite does, and I would have the AI, not Cortana bot, read off the entire Raid Shadow Legend ad, where it's not anyone talking, you just play it. It's like, hello, Raid Shadow Legends is got this new release. You can get 10,000 silver dollars if you whatever.
And this elite thing, it's like the procedurally generated, like, text-to-speech Cortana thing. Yeah, that'd be perfect. Yeah. That'd be amazing. No, we gotta do a new one.
I read it in my announcer voice. Raid Shadow Legends, today only.
Dan, I don't do that. It's scary. This is worse when you made that weird flesh noise in the podcast. What?
No, it wasn't a flesh noise.
I don't know what that noise was.
It was an adhesive launcher.
It was shocking is what it was. It was fucking nightmare fuel, and never make that noise again. And you might today, because that's gonna come up. The sticky noise might come up again. It's true, one gimmick is gonna come. We got a studio update today. So there's new models to look at, and we got some details on reinforcements and the new End Song expansion, which is cool, and it sounds like it's going to be exactly what we predicted, which is exciting. I think I'm excited for this. The first things first, we got some renders of, I think, the July releases, starting with some Pano bots, the Bulleteer and the Armbot, which both look great. I like
these. They look way better than the other ones.
Yeah, I like the new style. I particularly like, I think it's the I think it's the ODD bot on the right. Yeah, no, it's the arm bot on the right. I like the heavy armor bot on the right with his like little wings. He's really cool. The arm bot looks really nice. And then the Bulleteer has like this, it's a very different like front eye. Like all the previous ones have like a round front eye and it has like a triangular front eye, which I think is kind of cool. It looks a little bit like the Horizon Zero Dawn robots. It has this like weird triangular like front eye and the Spitfire slash shotgun.
Menacing.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It looks a little like meaner. And I'm excited these will be hopefully in the new plastic and not in metal, because I have metal ones for my NCA slash Bruin armies, and they're not fun. They chip and they're not easy to transport. And I like the new Lockspot. He kind of looks like the slave bots though from Dr. Worm, except on like a roly ball. Do you get that kind of look?
Honestly, it looks like a minion.
Yeah, it has like a pupa thing. Like it looks like a pupa. Like it has like little things on the side. I don't know. I like him.
Yeah, he's neat. It's like a little, it's not even a worm. It's more like a pod.
Like a parking cone. Like an upside down parking.
Potato.
Yeah, he's a little potato with a fin. It's weird. I like him. He doesn't have the little triple wings he used to have. The old ones had like the kind of three finials, and this one looks more like a shark.
Way too much like a wild parrot.
A wild parrot, yeah, maybe. Yeah, he looks like a shark. He looks like his mouth should open up. There should be a giant row of like extendable teeth in there.
And then you draw that just below the dot where there's like that sunken in little what looks like a jaw.
Yeah,
just do that flesh tone every time.
Yeah,
and they all look like they're people that have just been locked inside.
Fucking MODOK, like he's just MODOK's head.
Yeah,
yeah, I can see that. Yeah, paint him like MODOK.
I will never not see the mouth there. Now.
Yeah,
that's his mouth. That's how he talks.
But he's got like a Terrence and Phillip mouth. He's like, hey, well,
he's the robots. He's the robots from Invincible. There you go.
Oh, the zombie robots, the cyborgs from Invincible.
It's even got the one red eye like they have too.
Oh, weird. Yeah. You're right. It does have that look to it.
But where's the flamethrower?
Give him little hands. The mouth opens.
The flamethrower. It just screams fire at you. But like it goes straight down like a Pinocchio jaw. Like it just like drops right down.
And it's just like
the eye's normally blue and it turns red when it sees something hostile, and then it just screams fire at you.
And there's like a 12-year-old Japanese girl screaming at the sound.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It does the Tachikomis from Ghost in the Shell thing where it has the personality of like an 8-year-old girl. And so it's just sitting playing Game Boy the rest of the time. That was my favorite Ghost in the Section 9 Ghost in the Shell bit where I think it's one of like Batu's in like the back of like the helicopter with a bunch of Tachikomis, and they're just sitting there playing Game Boy. And he's like, what is wrong with you? Why do we have these you're police robots? Like, what are you doing? That's really funny. And then we got some new Bakunin. So the sculpts for the initiated with the multi-rifle and the MSV, the orphans, it looks like the hacker, or it's the hacker and MSV orphan and then the initiative observant on the left there. I really like the orphans. They have a cool, like,
who would have guessed that the face sculpt would be better than the face art?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Normally that's not how that goes. Normally the artwork is easy, but...
Mm-hmm. I like that they're still in there, like they have that sort of like rubber kind of like section. They look like cheap spacesuits. You know what I mean? Like they're wearing like repurposed like mining gear and stuff like that under their robes. I like that the Bakunin stuff, it still holds that Nomad aesthetic of like repurposed like industrial gear, because you guys are all sort of like freedom fighters and stuff.
I like that Infinity is a real big fan of throwing clothing on top of clothing. It's like all the orcs that wear the orcs and those guys who wear jackets over top.
The orc is wearing wearing his Columbo jacket.
I don't think Mr. Nice that jacket does anything for you in addition to the power armor that you're wearing. I just don't believe it.
It's because he's a bioroid. He's probably like an Appleseed guy, where his whole body, he's not actually in power armor. His body's just been replaced by that, and so he's wearing it to feel human. Like that's what I would actually guess, is that it's not that he's inside power armor; it's that he is. His body has been cut off. It's just his head. He's a head attached. Like it's his spine and his lungs and stuff are encased in that. He's like RoboCop. And so he's wearing it to feel human. That would be my guess. But I don't know. We'll see.
Zayadins do it too. Some of them don't have helmets.
That's true.
What's your answer now?
I don't know. I feel like the humanists.
I do it to look cool, okay? I just wear the jacket because it makes me look cool.
That's why you wear a tactical turtleneck. There's only a few applications for the tactical neck, but it's also to look cool. We got the Morat expansion pack beta, like the Beast pack here, which is the new Tirok Hunter, which I think is better than limited edition one, honestly. That comes with the Pit Beast, which is pretty cool. It's like a big chunky Velociraptor. I like the Kirk Beast. He looks really nice. He's got little tiny front arms and then like this ginormous like squig head, which is pretty badass. And then finally we have a new pack hunter, a leader for the Gakis and Predas, and it comes with your fifth Gaki and Preda if you want it. And that is the the Oznat. And it's got that same Predator mask, so it's wearing one of their skulls still, which I think is cool. I like its big glaive. And for some reason, like the Predator aesthetic of it wearing like scale mail, I don't know, it does it for me. I think it's cool. I like the brutality of the ones that run with the beasts. They have like a real Predator vibe, which I'm digging.
They look sweet.
Having been painting old Morats, I miss them. New Morats they're just not the same.
I don't know. The old Morats Zoidberg faces make me laugh because they don't have mouths. They just have like a Zoidberg like frill at the front, which is really cute.
Some do. Some have mouths.
Some do. And then finally, and this is going to make people happy, we have Yara Hadad, the final Code 1 release and Code 1 character. This got proxied like crazy. I think every game I played against Jordan with his assassins, he used Hera. She's pretty great with her marksman rifle and all of her
skills. She went the other way. Instead of wearing a jacket on the outside of her power armor, she wears her underwear on the outside.
Yes, she's wearing a thong.
She's totally wearing a thong.
We're not super sure why, but she's wearing a thong outside of her like cargo pants.
It's a bodysuit. Put it on the bottom, though.
That's right. Yeah,
no, I want to be like Kusanagi.
That's right.
Okay, Jesus.
All right. Watch a lot of Ghost in the Shell.
Here I am trying to be cool again.
Yeah. And then last but not least, we have Phoenix, who is doing his best Hamish from Braveheart's dad impression with his sweet beard and like, I don't know, 1980s haircut. He's got real, whatchamacallit, shoot. Yeah, there's a comic book that I used to read that had a guy that looks exactly like this. And I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was about a guy who could he could tell anything by eating things. So he was like a detective and he could like solve any mystery by like he would ingest things to eat it. And his partner looked like this.
This person got murdered. Let me eat them.
That's literally, there was a lot of instant cannibalism in that. Yeah.
Cartman really in that episode of South Park where he's only psychic when he eats ice cream.
That's kind of like that. Yeah, exactly. I like this Phoenix sculpt. It's got a real big tactical rock, like maybe the tallest tactical rock of all time.
The tactical beam.
And that's not true. Mary Problems tactical rock goes on to tomorrow.
That's fair. That's fair. Is. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. This one's he's like really having to struggle to put his leg up.
And he's fighting
like
for
his
it.
Captain, yeah. His Captain Morganing is extremely high. Like he's doing like a squat thrust right here. And he's maybe. carrying his contender as well, which is interesting, as well as a heavy rocket. But I'm just excited to have the sculpt back because he's a staple in Aleph. I think this is fine. He's never used to him. Scale now. He's so good. He's real good.
Four Ectromos, man.
That's fair. And then finally we got the first insight into Endsong, which is the book and box set that's going to be released at Gen Con. So the book has two supporting, it sounds like, releases with it from what was described. Now, I may be getting this wrong. Go watch the video for yourselves. But the way it sounded like there's going to be a box that goes with this with two dueling tags and their supporting characters to go with them. And then some type of box for this new range of reinforcement products. And the way that Bossery kind of outlined the product range, it's that reinforcements as a concept is a separate rule that can be used to create reinforcements. And reinforcements are things that deploy mid-table late game, which sounds a lot like what we were postulating early on when this got announced. And the way he described it was by showing the map of all of Ariadna, and in particular Merovingia, who are on the outskirts, or sorry, central to Ariadna and surrounded by U.S. Ariadna, Caledonia, Matter and Tartary. So the reason the Merovingians are getting new models and are kind of piloting this reinforcements thing is it's right in the name. The MRRF, the Merovingian Rapid Response Force, is basically the reinforcements that get called when one of those other provinces on Ariadna is having a problem. Like when the Antipodes are getting riled up and charging over the wall and killing everybody, these guys get in their dropships and they come in and they drop in as reinforcements. So these are sort of like the archetypal reinforcements, and their faction has been announced called the Silver Company, Silver Company or Silver Team Silver. It's the Equipe Argent, which is basically the MRRF. And it sounds like they will be used as kind of like a template. Like these models and units are going to be the here's what this looks like when you play with it. Here's kind of like a pre-constructed version of this, and these units will all fit into that structure. But then the format of making reinforcements is open-ended, so any faction can make their own reinforcements using their own faction list of the types of troops who are used usually to call in and do things like mechanized deployments, which it sounds like this is going to be kind of the return of, to show up like midfield, mid-game. So that's the plan. The reinforcement slide basically said new rules, new profiles, and it's going to create a new meta, because that's going to be a big thing. However, if you can drop a whole bunch of units midfield in missions, obviously this won't be like ITS 14 sort of like compatible necessarily. Like it's not planned for ITS 14, so it's probably going to have some, you know, unexpected results like late season, but I'm sure it's planned for next season. I'm sure when we look at the season 15 like document, they'll have taken into account like the possibility that we can now just drop troops in the middle of the table at some point during the game and create these like little reinforcement batches.
Oh yeah, two alpha strikes a game now. I love it.
Well, I mean, I'm excited for like what it could mean against alpha strikes, because being able to hold stuff in reserve, hold off against an alpha strike and then drop in a counterpunch, I think could be like a big deal, right? Because you can't necessarily count on your alpha strike having gotten all the troops or gotten all the objectives.
Right, but that's okay, because you have a second one coming next turn.
Well, I mean, if both sides have reinforcements, yeah. I guess we'll see. It sounds like it's going to be pretty much what we predicted. I'm excited all factions get it, and I'm excited that they're piloting some classic forces, giving them new sculpts and bringing them back, because the Merovingians are very cool, and being able to I think see them back on the table is going to be exciting. And that was it for the studio update. Carlos looked in good form and looked like he was excited about the things coming for Gen Con, so I think it's nothing if not good to fundamentally change how the game can be played this late in the game's life cycle, right? Like where we're at. And so I'm all for anything that does like a big shakeup like this. I think that's going to be fun. It's add more dimensions. Yeah. Add more dimensions. All right. So we are now into the O12 takedown. And this is all on Dan, who I'm sure is completely prepared for me to just...
Hey, wheel. We had a little tournament event.
Oh, yeah. Played. Sorry. Yeah. What have you guys been up to? Sorry. Go on.
I guess I forgot how to play Infinity.
Did you? Oh, no.
Well, no. It was like a, hey, we're playing Infinity. I was like, oh, yeah. That's coming up soon. Oh, yeah. What are the missions? Oh, yeah. What? Let's play Druze. What's the worst that could happen? Oh, wait. My list didn't save on my phone. My printer's not working. Wait. I got to build a list 2 seconds before I'm supposed to play. Oh, we're halfway through turn one. Oh, I didn't even draw a card for my objective. What's going on? I'm dead. Okay. I get the buy. Okay. And the last game, I was like, okay, I'm finally in the right headspace to play Infinity.
Tremendous. So the game one was a complete write-off, and then you remembered what game you were playing, and then game two was fine.
Well, game two was terrible. I brought three tags in a Druze list as a joke list, and it turns out we both struggled together and both made some horrible decisions and had some fun, and it made it a good game. And we fought for second, last, and last place. And unfortunately, I didn't get last place because that had prize money.
No, I also came in worst place. I also went to a tournament this weekend. You ran this event, didn't you? How was that?
I mean, there were so few of us that I ended up participating as well. And everyone there was like three out of the people, out of the like five, six that were there, were people who have run events. So it was very much like, all right, everybody, we all know what we're doing next table.
right. It was a round robin, basically. It was a six-person round robin. That's cool.
Yeah,
it was just five.
Yeah. Very short notice, so not a lot of people came, but everybody got to play. Never got to play a couple games, so.
And the next one will be better.
Yeah.
Or worse.
I played Steel Phalanx as per the vote on the Discord. And then I just brought Jank.
How'd they go? Did you bring Hercules?
No. I brought Hector and 4 Ectromoy. And I just played that same list each time.
Ectromoy is so good.
It was so dumb.
4 Ectromoy are amazing. The Hacker Profile is amazing.
I had 2 Hackers and 2 just double chain rifles.
Yeah.
And I play against Toha, and he's got his symbiomate sapper sniper sitting on the highest point of the table that's just in his deployment zone. And then there's a nice little column right behind the sniper. And I'm like, EvoBot says jump better. Boop. All right, I super jump up. I hit you with double chain rifle. And he's like, my symbiomate takes it. I'm like, hey, a 4 is a fail. So he loses his symbiomate and goes to his second wound state, but then he kills the guy with all of the other people that were nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, another guy jumps in the exact same spot. Whoop, he jumps up and finishes you off. All right, sniper's dead. Atalanta, kill everybody.
Everybody gets to go. Amazing.
Yeah.
That's so funny. But when it doesn't give you a lot of options, when it's got lots of mimetism and cover and stuff like that and range, then dropping double chain rifles from the sky is definitely always a play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, I actually went and participated in an event. I went to go see the Toronto meta downtown. Drove like 90 minutes into the city on a Sunday, which was great because there was no traffic, and got to play 3 rounds against a 10-player event at the Sword and Board, which is like the monthly Infinity event that's downtown and seems to be very well populated with people that we used to see come to the events in like the olden days, in like the 2018, 2019 days. So I got to say hi to them. I took my Corregidor because I was just packing up this stuff that was already in a case. And played against 3 players in round 1. I played against Vanilla Combined. And it was a very interesting game. I got really, 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 really effective use out of McMurrow in the first turn. There was a missile bot basically camped out across from me. I knew there's going to be there wasn't a lot visible, which meant I knew there was probably an invisible tag somewhere, either the tag or the anathematic. Ended up being the anathematic, so I just hurled what's his name across the board, McMurrow, and killed the missile bot as fast as I could. And he ended up running out of orders, but taking like 3 to 5 orders with the guys out with him. And then my gator did gator things, you know, throwing out mines and then mine shooting, killed a Caronted HMG that was hiding behind the building, which caused him to jump. And we were playing direct action, so the first mission was cutthroat, and that meant I got a lieutenant kill early on, and from there it was kind of hard for him to dig up from that, like with the Caronted dead. He didn't really have a good range piece. He still had Bitten Kiss, who could do some hacker stuff, but I locked him down with koalas, and it was generally this anathematic appeared on his round 1, tried to outfight the gator and McMurrow at the same time, who were like supporting each other, and McMurrow just slowly dodged towards him. Like dodging plasma rifles, dodged towards him, and then eventually got him in melee. And then the anathematic was just like, I don't want to be here. And McMurrow was like, well, you can wound me one at a time, and then I'm going to hit you with this giant sword. And that game kind of ended that way. And I lost my second game playing against Vanilla Hack, against a guy named Dale. Really good player. He had some really smart like turn one plays. I got turn 1. And instead of putting his Fide into like my deployment to try and hunt me down, we were playing basically the direct action version of Frontline. He put his Fide in the midst of his like valuable hitting pieces, so I couldn't missile bot him because the Fide was there and the template wouldn't let me kill him. It was a really smart play. So I had to like camp with koalas instead. He had Zmi and Zarek, one of the twins, the bike twins, which my gator tried to hunt down. And they both just... I locked the whole middle of the table down with mines and crazy koalas, and he made every, like, I even double mine shot his like TR bot. He just shot back and then made both his saves for the mine. Like, it was just one of those things where like I feel like my plan was good, and then the times I needed the dice to go my way, they didn't.
and I couldn't keep it going. And eventually Zemi and Zemeka got onto the gator. They took a wound each, but they're dogged. And yeah, and eventually he got immobilized. And as soon as he was immobilized, Noff crawled out of the basement and was like, okay, I'm safe. I can go fight somebody now. And just killed the gator. And I didn't have a hitting piece that could really make it out after that. And it was an uphill battle. And then by turn three, I didn't have enough pieces to contest the board. He took the middle. And then my last game was against Tunguska. And that game was like, if my dice had gone cold in game two, they went so hot in game one or game three. It was unbelievable. I got first turn again, and McMurrow did good in game one. In this game, he probably killed 150 points by himself in the first turn. Like in his first three orders, he killed a salamander in hand to hand. Because he was waiting through all that, he activated all the koalas that I'd like mind laid around it. And killed a specter and an interventor, like just by them going off because they AR'd against me and he forgot they were there. He killed a lot of them in the first turn, and there just was really nothing that could be done after that. They couldn't dig back out from the tag just being instantly murdered by an active turn dodge out of smoke and then berserking with McMurrow. So I ended up coming worst place, which was fourth, because it was the only place in the entire standings that didn't get a prize. So it was cool. It was really fun just to play three games, to not have to run an event, and get to just play Infinity. I'm hoping the next one will not be direct action, so I can play with some actual secondaries and classifieds and stuff too, and play some more complex missions. But it was just fun to play three games of Infinity in a day and not think about anything else. And not be a workhorse for a minute. So I really enjoyed that. And thanks to Dave who ran it, and everybody who was there hanging out. It's good to catch up with everybody and eat some food and see the Toronto guys. And I'll be back. I'm going to try and go once a month as my present to myself playing Infinity. Just to keep it fresh and actually have some relevant games that are either not studio games or not me playing as a ringer games. You know what I mean? Actually go play some real Infinity against people and try. So
I did learn that the Volkalak is real good.
Is the total immunity missile launcher one was he using? Which one was he using?
5-man link HMG.
Yeah, the HMG is really good too.
The
stand up ARO missile launcher is really good as well, just in a Harris, but the active turn one's amazing.
Well, it was him versus Atalanta. It was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. He wouldn't die because I just kept binging in with snipers and he just kept passing because he's under seven.
He's arm seven
and,
TI.
And then finally he crit me and then I just passed both saves. It was like...
That's the ultimate, everyone's sweating. No one's feeling good about this.
Yeah. I'm like, if I lose Atalanta, that'll be bad, but it's not catastrophic. If he loses this guy, it's game. And then I won.
Tremendous.
Earned on his turn because of course.
Yeah, of course. You're paying for TR. Why not?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there we go. This is a big loose horseshit opening. This is a long ass open. We're 45 minutes in. We can actually now get to our actual topic, which is the O12 takedown. So, Dan, we're going to do this in the same order. Do you remember our parameters from last time we did this? Anything about that? Okay.
I don't remember anything.
Oh, and do you want to remind us? We're going last to first. We're starting with Starmada. And then ending on vanilla 12.
Oh, we're gonna go Star Armada.
Yeah.
Very well.
And then
Owen pulled us our top three. Yeah, it was like you need to ask us what we think our top three.
What are
three,
the things that are scary in here? And then as the person who plays it, you say what you think are your best things, and then we argue about why you're wrong.
And then we disagree with you and bully you until you just agree with us and fold.
Exactly. All right, well, you go first then, Ash.
I played this faction recently too, which I think is got my eye on a few different things. So one of the key combos I've played in here so far, which maybe is good, maybe isn't, is I really like the Raptor boarding squad with the killer hacker profile. The fact that he can turn into an impersonation marker, he's heavy infantry, he's got a flamethrower, he can do that corner, that triangle shooting, right, where he comes around a corner, he's in marker state, you have to delay, and then when he shoots you with a heavy flamethrower and a multi-rifle, and he's like he's not that expensive. He's 42 points for a really decent like BS-14 heavy infantry platform that can just snake through mines, snake through everything. He's scary because you can't really defend against him with hackers and mines and like koalas and deployables the way that you normally would be able to, because he's going to have impersonation. So he picks his fights. And then when he gets to fight you, he can bully almost anybody just with his raw stat line. And he's APA 4. So, like, I get that 42 points isn't cheap, but that profile has so many things it can do. It can mind sweep if you wanted to with the, you know, like the little diva bot, or it can just go hunt pieces. And everything's going to be scared at it because it's always going to get to its optimum range band because of that impersonation. During the active turn, it's just, and it can just switch, right? It can just turn into it, yeah, and go do it.
And him and his peripheral have 360 visors.
Sure do. Yep. 360 visors. And the terrain 0G, which in this one, in this season, means that they mostly have super jump.
And which he's is NCO.
Kind of cool. And he's NCO. Exactly. So he gets you a lot of value. Like, I'm always worried about this guy. When I was playing like Corgador, there was a Starmada player there, and I was like, oh, I'm going to deal with that guy. Because I'm using deployables and hackers, right? To slow the advance and like jam up the midfield. And this guy just ignores it. He just turns into a smiley face and walks through my net, basically. So any army that's putting up like kind of like that kind of midfield net is going to worry about him because they don't have a good answer to him getting there. Like, even the fact that, like, let's say you want to line him up against like a bunch of other enemy camo markers, you can snake him up there. If those camo markers reveal and try and find you, who cares? And if they don't, you stay as a smiley face and then dodge out of a smiley face into line of fire a bunch of those camo markers and then intuitive attack them with the flamethrower, right? So like, you can clear hordes of camo with him. Like, there's all kinds of like stuff you can do that is real interesting with that profile. The next one's maybe kind of obvious, but I think it's to do with the fact that this is like, there's some new profiles in this faction, and particularly the changing in skills, the beta trooper getting another beta trooper, the Epsilon, I think, got the beta trooper tag recently. So that beta trooper Harris with a Secu droid and a beta trooper, maybe just a doctor, it's a really powerful Harris for not that many points. I really like the beta trooper doctor with any MSV. You get smoke in this faction too, so being able to smoke shoot's a huge deal, right? Because you have access to the
Varangians,
that's right. So having an MSV2 platform with like an HMG, or even the shock marksman rifle, if you want to keep it cheaper, I'm worried about that guy because they have climb plus, which means they can hide during the first turn. They're not that expensive. There's a lot of good defensive pieces in Starmada and O12 in general, so they don't usually lean on their MSV to be like defensive. And then because they have climbing plus, they have so many like plunging fire opportunities to get up high and then get into like an optimal range band or like an optimal angle. And then it's just such a solid like 30 something point profile, right? 34 points for a multi-sniper rifle with MSV2, bioimmunity, min minus 3 and climbing plus. And that Secu droid makes it so cheap because the Secu droid is not that expensive. You take the Secu droid with like the plasma burst, flash pulse, and the adhesive launcher, it's 20 points. And then a beta trooper doctor, who I think is actually also not that expensive because I think he has a boarding shotgun. And you have all your range bands covered. You have like super decent, you know, troops. They're all two structure. Like, the droids themselves are basically heavy infantry. And that MSV guy can, if he goes down, hopefully because he's shocking me, and get brought back by the doctor. And that doctor is whip 13, right? It's got a boarding shotgun, pretty sure. Yeah, boarding shotgun med kit. 36 points. So the whole thing all in, you take the sniper, 70, 90 points for like a really hard hitting Harris that can benefit from smoke shooting because of this faction.
Wait, aren't we supposed to be talking about how to beat these things?
Well, it's what are we scared of? We're going to talk about that.
We're talking about what we're scared of. Okay.
This is phase one.
I'm confused.
Yeah. And then the last thing you really got to look out for, I'll be honest, is the Cyber Ghost. I was going to say the Zeta, but I'd almost say Zeta Cyber Ghost combo, because these guys are really, really good at taking down visors. I forgot that the cheap ass Cyber Ghost kill hack device plus for 21 points has white noise. And that means you can pair it against visors to create zero vis zones and then hunt them with that five dice Zeta, like through the white noise. It is the ultimate you know, Atalanta counter, it any kind of like overwatching MSV does not want to fight these guys. And he's only 21 points. And he's got a pitcher, hacking device plus, stealth, and he's with 14. He's a super decent hacker. And he can cyber mask because hacking device plus also has cyber mask. So you can hide him. You can do all the same, like slipping around to put the smoke where you want it to be stuff, and then put that white noise down and pair it with just a regular old shooting unit. So anybody from like just your peeler, like your HMG bot, to something more dangerous like a Zeta, and you've got a real, like, you got a real problem with this guy. This guy, he is literally a ghost. He can slip to where he wants to be with that hacking device plus, and then put in those zero visibility zones to drop visors. So he's real good at hunting things like Asuras or the Marut. You know, he's really good at stopping those overwatching pieces like Kamau's or Atalanta or any of those pieces. Or even the Karantid. I think the Karantid has MSV on one of his profiles too. So yeah, those are my three. What do you think, Owen?
Yeah, I mean, for sure on the Cyber Ghost, because he's kind of their, like, he's their guy when it comes to hacking and things like that. I don't find the Raptors as terrifying because the Raptors got like a middling defensive stats. Like, he has no marker, or he has no mimetism. He's only armor 3, and he wants to fight up close, which puts him at risk of everything. So, like, yeah, marker state gets you there, but like, what happens if they also have dirt cheap guys that are like, oh, it's a flamethrower and a multi-rifle. All right, chain rifle. We'll all die here.
Well, you just use the D.Va bot to clear that stuff out, right?
Sure, yeah. But the one that I think is the unsung thing that's going to get you, and like, it kind of applies in general to just O12, but the blue coat link. Just the security link with the run-of-the-mill blue coats. Because like, normally when you go after the cheerleaders in the backfield, you could just kill them. Like, oh, they might have chain rifles, they might have like combis and stuff like that. These guys are all armed with riot stoppers or adhesive launchers or some combination thereof, and like, they're also good in melee. Like, you could bring 4. They're dirt cheap. The cheapest one is 13 points. He can link with like half of the faction as a security guy, like Cho, those Seku droids that are great. Raven Eyes are solid. And then, yeah, this guy can just, when the time comes, he's BS-12, he stands up and goes, yeah, BS-15 with a 5-man pure team link, and I shoot you with 3 adhesive launchers. Nothing in the game wants to be shot by a bunch of adhesive launchers.
Yeah, it's true. I always underrate the adhesive launcher, but against things that are like not tags, they're basically, you might as well be dead. Like, the -6 fizz test is very hard to pass. Like, it's effectively against, like, a super damage weapon.
Even tags who, like, normally, like, oh, like a Sphinx gets into the back line, right? And he's going to just flamethrower and machine gun all of the people in the backfield. This guy just goes, yeah, I'll try. And then if you fail, if I win one roll, or if you make the mistake of being within large template range, odds are, because it's about 50-50 on every tag, like one or two of them are Fizz 17, but most are going to be 16 goes to 10 or maybe 11. And he's got 2 of these things because he's in a link, right? Yeah, like, minimum team, yeah. It's 2. And that's with the template, or he's shooting you. Shooting's obviously not less likely, but normally you could run into a group of guys and go, I'm armor 7 or 8. I don't care if they shoot me. I'm just going to kill them all. These guys are, every time you want to fight them, it's like, I have to take the absolute maximum, like least risk. I have to take maximum care, because one mistake against this group of people and I could lose my heavy hitter piece for the rest of the game, because it might be like impossible to get them out of that pile. Like, even because if he gets caught trying to reset out of it, they'll just shoot you more while you're trying to reset.
You're dodging out of it. Yeah,
or dodging out of it. You're trying to dodge at -9 or -6. Well,
the problem is that when you hit a tag with it, once it fails its fizz test and has to dodge, its dodge is fixed at 11, so it only dodges on a 5.
Yeah.
So it's good at the initial resist usually, but then once it has to dodge afterwards, it's not as good
at. But the thing is, it's like, if it rolls up on you and dodges, you're like, all right, go away. I didn't want you to kill me anyway. I'm here to provide orders for my, maybe you brought the Razor, or maybe you have a Santiago or a Zeta or whatever, or a Bronze. But just the fact that the order monkeys are threatening to anything that comes after.
Yeah, they're dangerous to operate around. You don't want to just engage them because it's not just a combi rifle that you're probably going to shrug off. It's something that's significantly more lethal. Yeah, I can see
that. It's going to attack a stat that you're not usually getting attacked by.
Yeah.
There's a few adhesive launchers out there in the game, and then all of a sudden, a whole bunch of them all came onto one guy.
It's because the cops. The cops have all this. They got their tasers. They got their Demolition Man tasers.
And the reaction of like, oh, well, you could always just smoke and go into melee. And then all of a sudden, you're like, Natural Born Warrior, CC 20, CC minus 6? What?
Yeah, dude doesn't play.
And he just slaps you with the cuffs.
Yeah, he's been in the mean streets of Neo Terra for years and years.
Yeah, he knows how to beat up a werewolf.
When the food riots start on the Nomad starship and cannibalism breaks out, this is the guy you call to go break it up. So he's kind of seen it all.
When your Speculo Killer walks into melee with him and he's like, no, I'm not surprised, I'm wearing my hat, and then beats her down with his... And
also, you're minus 9 to hit me. Yeah,
with his CC weapon. Yeah.
Get out of here.
Built-in 6 cents. So anyway, the fact that you can bring like a 5-man link of them for like sub 60 points if you wanted to mix in some people, mm-hmm. or just over 60 points, like I find it... Like them with a couple Kappa hackers who are also dirt cheap makes this like support link... like the support core link, particularly obnoxious,
right? Or even just operating around the support pieces, like getting around to fight. Like if you take a stray shot from them, they're more dangerous than you think they're going to be for the general support pieces. Yeah, I can see that. Is there anything else that stands out besides that?
Other than that, I mostly just agree. Like, I don't have anything to add as far as. Raptors are scary. I think if you go all the way with the beta troopers, because they're a climbing mimetism heavy infantry, that link can be one that can face up basically any other fighters. Like, don't expect whatever you have to be tough enough to fight that in the ARO. Like, it's unlikely you have a tool that can beat them if they really all come after you.
Mm-hmm. My last point was going to be actually kind of about that, but not about a specific unit. It's that this faction is swimming in climbing plus, like so much climbing plus. So you can't assume you're safe on a roof.
Yeah.
Everything that's a hitting piece in this faction either has 0G, which means they might have super jump this season, or just has native climbing plus. Like the Epsilon's have climbing plus, the Beta Trooper has climbing plus, the Zeta has climbing plus. The Oko has climbing plus, the Peeler I'm pretty sure has climbing plus. It does. The HMG bot has climbing plus. Like, there is so much ability to just ignore verticality in this list that you don't expect it. Yeah, the Nyokas have climbing plus. Bronze has climbing plus. I think everybody's all super jump. Like, there's so much mobility in this list. The friggin' Roadbot has climbing plus. Like, everything can get to where you are. The Sarco does too. Like, there is no safe high rooftop where you're like, well, they got a long scale climb. It's like, nope, they can walk up there and shoot you in the same order. And that's like almost a universality to the hitting pieces in this list, where you have to take into account the fact that terrain is not going to necessarily keep you safe from these guys. And that's a big part of Infinity, like using terrain to your advantage.
I guess. I view it with the beta troopers. The thing that puts them above is all of the other guys who have climbing plus are not getting to the 5-man team.
Yeah, but I mean, the Zeta doesn't care. The Zeta's already BS-14 with 5 dice, right? Like, there's stuff that just doesn't care.
BS-16 with 5 dice.
Sure, yeah, but you've also got like MSV climbing plus smoke shooters, you know what I mean? Like, which is mod stacking the other way instead. They've got mimetism cover and minus 6 for shooting through smoke, so like they don't care if they're higher BS, you're gonna be BS-1, right? Like,
right, but I'm saying all of those guys can be together, like the Beta and the Epsilons can be part of that 5-man team, but like the Zeta, the Bronze, those guys, they're not gonna be part of that, and that's why I'm trying to call it
a wild card.
He's not going to get the plus 3 BS though.
No, he's not going to get the bonus. But I think he starts at 4 or 13, right? So like he's not as low as.
Well, so do they. They're all 13.
Actually, he will get full team with the Nyokas.
Yeah, he can't get with.
He can't get full team with the Nyokas because he has that keyword. Right.
All right, there you go. So the Bronze is on that page then.
And it's all climbing plus.
Yeah, that's all climbing plus. And the Nyokas are cheap too. Like, comparatively speaking, compared to the Beta Troopers, they're half the price of a Beta Trooper.
For half the stat.
But yeah. If the bronze is leading them, they don't care. If the bronze HMG is the one out front, those guys could just stand around and not care.
Yeah. Dan and I had a game where it mattered, but the secondary guys were relevant. But anyway, Dan, are we right?
Yeah. What do you think, Dan? What's the strengths of this faction?
Ash fell down on the everything's good, but
I didn't say everything's good. I said having climbing plus on all your hitting pieces is good. That doesn't mean everything's good. That means that you have to assume shit can get to you.
No, yeah. One of my big points was climbing plus everywhere on gunfighters. That's 100% on. It just kind of, you get to go everywhere all the time with whoever you want, and it's very easy to just make everybody climbing plus, and it's real fun. It's like really, really fun. The impersonation raptor, he's good. I don't think he's necessary, and a lot of people bring him, but he's hard to play against. If like, how do you play against impersonation? And the fact that his NCO is really nice. It's the riot stoppers that are everywhere that's possible. Is that you can get riot stoppers on the robot, on Zeta has it. It's kind of annoying. I wish I had a heavy flamethrower, but it's worked out. It's worked out. The other motorcycle, Judge Dredd.
Lawkeeper
can bring two side bots that have, you know, five point side bots that have riot stoppers, and so you can just be like corner camping all the corners with 5 point side bots and just be like, come around. I hope you're good at dodging, but if you're dodging, you're not killing me, so that's fine too. They can also run, they're super fast and they can clear mines and stuff, so yeah, lots and lots of riot stoppers. And I think the beta link, the 5-man beta link, which is 3 betas, a Seku droid, and an Epsilon, the fact that most of them are 6-2 except for the Epsilon, and then you can bring a killer hacker, an MSV2 sniper or HMG, tin bot -3, a doctor, they all have climbing plus. The rest of them are 6-2. It's super strong. I think people have talked about it. I think it's really, really good. So the fact that climbing plus is everywhere, you get a crazy big beta link that can murder the world, and
made cheaper now, the Seku droids, right?
Yeah, non-lethal, and that the Epsilon can get the composition bonus now in the most recent update. But the non-lethals everywhere. It's really funny to hit somebody with a non-lethal, like in person. Because I'm having trouble thinking right now. If you immobilize them with A, which is like the sticky guns, and then you immobilize them B with the hacking, if they're heavy infantry, then because the rules conflict with themselves, the only thing you're allowed to do is reset, and also the only thing allowed to do is dodge, and so you're actually not allowed to do anything.
Really? No. Oh, yeah. Because you're sticky. Oh, because you're sticky.
Because your impersonation, you're immobilized A and B, which is with cheap hackers with the.
So it's you're only getting out with an engineer, basically.
Yeah, the engineer is the only person who can save you. And so, if you don't have an engineer, that person—I mean, it's still an order monkey, but. That's all they got.
Cover him in glue and then turn off his radio. he doesn't get to do anything.
Can't even call for help.
It's terrifying.
So that's
wait till we get really to vanilla and I talk about my favorite model in vanilla 012 who can do all of that all by themselves.
Let's talk about taking these guys down then. So what are your key ingredients that you want to consider? And maybe I'll go and start this one, Dan. What do you think the key ingredients are to consider to be ready for all the things we just talked about?
Infiltrating camo. Pick your poison. Do you want them to be hackers? Do you want them to be fighters? Do you want them to be cheap points traders? If you've got them, this faction is like, yeah, we're super fast. We can get all over the place and we can find all kinds of angles. but we're all expensive. We're all in the 20s. We're all above that. And yeah, we can bring cheap guys, but then we lose the thing that makes us the most unique. So you're probably only going to have one group of the like fast climbing plus here we go guys. And if you can trade some lives just to remove two or three guys from that group of the really fast ones, now you're just fighting normal infantry like you would all the time. That's how I have done it repeatedly against Dan. Or the other side, where you go so far off the rails with stats, where you bring a like five-man heavy infantry link that can just face whatever it is that comes after you. Mm-hmm. And you just play the dice game. And it's like, yeah, he's real quick. That's cool. BS-23.
Yeah, I would agree. They don't have... So they the one thing that is a key feature of all the stuff we just talked about that's scary in Starmada, it's mostly hackable, right? All the beta troopers are hackable. Succubus droids are hackable. The heavy infantry guys are bronze is hackable. The Zeta is hackable. All the
Cyber Ghost is hackable.
Cyber Ghost is hackable. Yeah. So what we're looking at is we're looking at an army that does pretty okay specified offensive hacking, but they're not exceptional at it. They're all Whip 13 for the most part. They use their hacking to hide and like support other units, but a really dedicated hacking net or hacking presence is really going to slow down their advance. They don't like having to go through like a turn zero hacking net. Like a Marans are going to drive them crazy because A, they're not going to want to go through turn one midfield repeaters and B, none of them dodge great. Like even the heavy infantry dodge okay, but like you're looking at eating things like crazy quals and mines isn't something
betas,
like
the betas dodge really well, actually.
The betas do, yes. It's how do you slow down that like drone advance? How do you slow down those robots? The Epsilon doesn't want to eat a mine, right?
No.
And so it's if you can put up either a turn zero hack net or if you go first, if you can litter fast pandas and repeaters around where they're already camped out, isolating these units is rough. They have one okay engineer, which is the Lambda. Which means they're not great at getting out of that stuff once it happens.
There is one other one.
Sorry, they do have Pandora, but if you're investing in Pandora, Parvati. Sorry, that's a big point costing like investment.
She just joins one of the cheapo links, right?
She is linkable.
Yeah, she joins her blue coat companions, and they don't.
But then
she
can't have remotes, right? She can't have U-bots, which she's going to want to actually like have presence because you're going to have stuff that needs to either get fixed and recovered or unisolated or whatever, potentially all over the place. If you're going to spend 38 points in engineer, you're going to want her to have a lot of like coverage and presence, and she can't get everywhere by herself.
I guess so. I've seen Dan have some pretty good effect of her just jumping and shooting.
Oh, definitely. She's actually a hitting piece too. Like she does more than just engineer.
No.
She do objectives.
Jumping and shooting repair gun.
Oh, gizmo kits. Got it.
Yeah. Because burst two, and a lot of the guys who are getting fixed have decent fizz. Like sure. They're above average.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't get rid of isolated and immobilized because it's not a repair role. So you can't get rid of like some being isolated or stuck with adhesives that way. You can only do that through a U-bot or by touching it yourself.
Mm-hmm. But a beta trooper who's on his second level of unconscious can.
You can fix guys. Yeah. You can shoot gizmo kits to fix guys for sure. I'm just saying, like,
too, because the beta trooper link will have a killer hacker.
It will, yeah.
And so
that is both a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
Which is both good and bad. So my thing is if you can create, like, you can really slow the momentum on this list, especially with all the climbing plus and stuff like that, by littering the field with repeaters, littering the field with deployables. If you can get a first turn to do that, save some orders to do that, because that climbing plus is incredible. Like, it speeds their army up so much. And if Starmada gets momentum going, like if they get up on those hard angles and start like doing plunging fire down into your waiting troops on turn one, they can have a really strong alpha strike. But they struggle to remove those threats, like those eminent threats of like hackers, sixth sense hackers. And you have to have really specific units to deal with. So yeah,
we didn't talk about are the Sarcos, which are new. And so they don't have models yet, and they don't, you know, they have probably haven't been played a whole lot, but sure. They are the infiltrating advanced deploy guys. So if you ever see any camo that's up on the board, you know they're Sarcos.
That's the only way it can be.
So you always know what they are. And if they're smart, they'll probably bring like the wild parrot one with the submachine gun, or otherwise it'll have a boarding shotgun. And so it's kind of good at close range. It does have climbing plus, so those things can kind of go in. And if you have a heavy infantry link and they deploy like that camo, beware of that. They can walk up, place a wild parrot, and then pop out and go hello,
and EM possibly
crap out of your heavy infantry link. So beware of that.
Yeah, wild parrots are real good.
Just eat it and not care at all.
That's right. Just roll it. Let your tag get wild parroted immediately. And it's the cheapest profile too. It's only 20 points. You will very often see two of these circles of wild parrots. That's what I'm immediately painting. I'm immediately painting two of the SMGFO ones.
Yeah. So yeah, you got to watch out for those. But yeah, if you know they're coming, obviously you can play around a little bit. But yeah, if you see camo, you know it's that. But otherwise, they have no other really advanced deployment except, I think, Casanova.
Casanova, and he's not even infiltrated. He's just part deployment plus 8, I think. Yeah. And he's not in a marker state either, which means you can template him. He's cool. I used him in a couple games recently, actually. But he's not. He doesn't have. If you're going second and you're using Casanova, he's probably going to die because he's forward deployment plus 8, and he's not. And he's got mimetism -6 and stuff like that. But he'll just get templated and stuff and probably die. So he's not. He's a very expensive midfield piece compared to those Sarkos.
Very, very susceptible to templates back at them. Like if you have a bunch of cheap chain rifles or whatever, they can get.
He does have infiltration plus 3. I'm sorry, I didn't realize he also had an infiltration stat.
That's a new profile for him. That was a new update they gave that. But it's still he doesn't have a high fizz to begin with. So infiltrating is a risky role for how many points he is.
If he goes past half. So yeah, I would bring out, if there is a model who really could deal with a lot of the stuff that they're going to do to them, he's Sunduk Butt. He's a brick wall.
Yeah, well, I think that says that leans into everything you said previously too, right? It's that midfield camo, pieces.
If you can put a hacker next to the Sunduk Butt. And you give it either the Fuhrbach or the Viral as the TR, and then just don't reveal until you have to. Just be there and be like, yeah, you can climb over all those buildings. Careful. Oh, someone got real close to me. Turn his brains off.
They don't like high fizz warbands either, because those templates are the main source of defense. JSA, Ariadna. High fizz warbands that can dodge those templates and get up close or template back are definitely a problem for
missiles like Big Murrow or any wolves or the bear pods, all those things are a lot of the things that I thought myself standing up with is the flash pulse bots or the adhesive launchers, whatever. And so they just completely ignore that.
Yeah, it's immune to stun.
Does nothing. EM mines and stuff that you'll have. We didn't talk about Raven Eyes, but that's another thing of they'll always probably have two Raven Eyes. One might be the lieutenant. It might not. But they are really good with their EMRATs. But dogs, they just don't care. So if you can ever bring McMurrow against them, they just have a real hard time. The only thing is a linked Epsilon sitting on a roof and looking out. So that can give you problems. But other than that, they really have nothing else. That's a good stand up and shoot at you besides their TR bot.
Yeah. And Hacking Device Plus, actually, because they only really have one MSV piece. If you have access to Eclipse or you have access to a Hacking Device Plus, don't forget your White Noise, because that'll help you fight that Beta Trooper like crazy.
And the Beta Trooper goes, he's got Armor 2 BTS 3 with bio immunity, but still Armor 3 is not that much. He's otherwise made of paper, and then he just goes down real quick.
And there's no one in Gabbard like that. That's why he's gonna have the Beta Trip Doctor there to give him back rubs after.
Yeah. But shock immune, but you can still he's if he gets hit, he usually goes down. That's my experience with him.
Anything that ends up fighting him is gonna fight him with something that makes sure he stays dead. Something that does DAs or explosives or something. If you're picking a fight with that guy, you're probably making sure that he does not get up from his nap.
Yeah, right, the other thing we didn't talk about is robots.
Oh, sure.
They're new as well, but they're super fast. They got time the terrain glass. Total.
I think they fall into that overall, like, watch out for fast, hitty pieces that can be on walls.
Yeah.
Yeah, move 8-6 with climbing plus. They can get there, and then transform, and then... And he can be buffed. No, he can't be buffed within
Armada. Don't forget that he's got a Panzerfaust. Everybody seems to forget about that Panzerfaust. But he's got SMG, and he's got this, and he's got that, and he's got a Panzerfaust, and everyone's like, I'll just fight him outside 16. And then it's like too close for SMG swisting the missiles and just pulls out the Panzerfaust.
The missile just pops out of the little bat back or whatever it is.
Yeah, and dude's got mimetism and cover. That's a terrifying Panzerfaust. Nobody wants to get hit by that.
Nope. Cool. Yeah. So there, you just kind of have to be familiar with what you're going. Very dealable to deal with everything. There's no like crazy things that are like, oh my gosh, like a Sun Dug Butt or kind of thing where it's just like, this is always.
The Zeta is a pretty scary power unit. I think the Zeta's he's an A tier tag, I think. He's really good.
Yeah. He's not great in melee. So if you can get him in melee with smoke or whatever.
He's just not good in short range in general. The riot stuff is really cool, but then it's like, and
yeah, like if Mimuro like dodges through and gets close, then he just
sure.
Jumps
I, on the Zeta, that's a universal. That's an almost universal tag truth, though, right? There's very few tags that are great in melee.
Right,
the Gator being one exception.
Not necessarily melee, but even just short range, right?
Yeah.
HMG to riot stopper.
Yeah, brawler range,
which is not ideal because like you'll end up fighting things like Spitfires that will close in and be shooting you, like gunfighting you inside 16.
Yeah, he's one of those tags that'll almost always be suppressing at the end of the turn because that's his point defense, is he switches to suppression and makes you pay to get there.
Yeah, he's a fast tag. He's a fast big tag, but you don't usually get those.
On with defense, he's not super crazy good, but on the offense, you gotta watch out for him. He's
a 5-dice tag. Yeah, five dice AP or 5-dice shock is amazing. And the fact that he can be plunging fire, stuck to walls, or just go where he wants.
Yep. But same weaknesses as everything else. Hack him.
No.
Possess him. Shoot all of Dan's own models with him.
All right, Vanilla 12. We've done it. We've solved Starmada. Watch out for Glowing Plus. Jam the midfield. You have to exploit their hacking weaknesses. What about O12 in general? What's your key? You go first this time, Owen. What's the key differences and what's the things to look out for? Because obviously, fire teams are off the table. And there is no, like, their fire team chart is trash. It's bounty hunters. And then the bronze can link with Varangians. There's like it doesn't even make sense, their fire team chart in vanilla O12. So it's kind of, huh?
My opinion is the 25-point Team Serious hacker with Serious bot is the most obnoxious / most useful tool in the list.
Why is that? Explain.
So in the way Dan was describing what can happen to you if you get hit by immobilize, whereas you get hacked immobilized and goo gunned immobilized, Team Serious can do that all by itself in ARO or active.
It can't do it in active because you can't do a BS attack and a hacking program at the same time.
Not in one order, but it can do it on its own. And then in reactive, it also can't do it in one, but it can do it in two because you can't do the hack and the
gun. That's right. Yeah.
But the point was that it doesn't need any other party to be involved. But nicely, it can because the bot is also a repeater.
So sure can.
If you have cheap-ass hackers, which you do because Kappas are dirt cheap in this faction, at 12 points and half a swick for them for their hacking profile, who is whip 13, so he's in the I'm not
he's
a garbage infantry.
He's the same as this guy, yeah.
Yep. Or I guess I'm not Pano is kind of the real stance. They're infiltrate, or no, sorry, they're forward deployment plus 8. They're not infiltrate. They do have mimetism. They both have mimetism. And then they're specialists, and like I find this such a like, it does all the jobs you would want it to do.
25 points too. It's real cheap. It's like real cheap. Yeah.
You get a four deployed repeater who can also be prone. You get a four deploy hacker who could be prone, who's armed with an SMG, which is good against everything at short range. And you get a riot stopper and you get the benefit of all of the other hackers you have behind you.
It's funny.
It's just cheap.
O12 in general throws out a lot of statuses. If you're not familiar playing against things that give you statuses like immobilize and isolate, you got to get familiar playing against O12 in general, but including Star Model. We didn't really harp on it there because it isn't leaned into as much, but I would tend to think that like that's a big key feature of what to look out for. And I think Team Serious really does encapsulate that, right? There's lots of EM weapons, there's zappers, there's EM grenades, there's tons of like adhesive and riot stoppers, right? So you're getting tons of immobilized A and B. And then because it's EM and because you have so many hackers and mad traps, that's right. Yeah, and wild parrots. Yep. You're throwing out lots of potentially isolates as well. So there's a lot of statuses that O12 in general can throw out. And if you're not like if you underestimate that with your big hitting pieces, they can end up in these no-win states like Dan described earlier. And the Team Serious is in particular one that can go and do that, especially at short range. And then at the same time, go push all the buttons in the midfield, right? Yeah. Like
you're one move skill away from the middle objective, right? Yeah. Like if you're going first and like you know how it's like you have to boop those buttons, you just do it right away. You just click, 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 click.
If you're playing Supremacy, if you're playing one of those ones with like three or four, if you're playing Unmasking where you gotta get to three of the buttons, you can do it almost all in the first turn. You can be seeing all the enemy HVTs and then climbing over the walls to get them in the first turn with these guys.
Yeah. I mean, there is a zone of control or exclusion on masking, I'm pretty sure, but yeah, it's still
you're 4 inches back because the exclusion zone only reaches to the HVT line basically. So you're far to point
one order to get there now, and then one order to do it. Whereas otherwise, they could just one order it. But yeah, I find them like a standout. Like, be aware that this is here because these guys are like, they're going to in and of themselves slow you right down if you try and do like a hard push through somebody. Cause like this one pair of models basically can cover like a 32 inch or not quite, but it's 24 inch zone of hacking just between the two of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So many, it's like, cause it's 8+8+8 plus their bases, right? Basically. Like, so you're looking like a 26 inch. Cause the you bought,
the Sirius is a size
the Sirius is size three. That's right. Yeah. He's actually bigger than most of the peripherals are.
Yeah. He's like, and so size. You put those guys and you can bring two. So you can cover your entire half of your board with zone of control or repeaters and hackers.
Yeah.
Like you can cover just the whole thing.
You have a turn zero hacking that. Pretty effectively with these guys. It's not all the way up like Moran's are, but it's pretty legit.
It's close enough that it can reach the midpoint, which means if there's objectives in the middle, you can be getting the spotlights and the hacking out at them.
Yeah, you can threaten spotlights. Yeah, you can threaten isolates.
And the missile bot game in this faction is no joke.
Yeah, for sure.
That would be because of things like these guys. The only other two things that I would call out that aren't in Starmada that come up here, the other one is the gangbuster. He's the other infiltrating guy. He gets a shout out in my opinion because he's got the mind layer mad trap, but he's also an MSV plus mimetism model, and you do have smoke. So the fact that he gets to stack both of those mods both ways, he's probably going to die when everyone tries to kill him. But along with Team Serious, I think you kind of decide which way you want to go, or maybe one of each, because they're about the same point cost. I think Team Serious is better. There's a solid argument for Gangbusters instead of Team Serious because of that MSV. But
and you can make them killer hackers and make them drop mad traps and mind layers at the beginning.
Yeah, no, there's a solid argument. I think Team Serious, though, because repeater. That one, in my opinion, overwhelmed. The fact that there's a second guy, he can do his discovers. He can open up the door for your what you call him, Cyber Ghost. He can open up the door for every Kappa hacker on the board. I think that makes him the if you don't have the Swick, you can't bring the Team Serious in the way I would do it. And then you pick the Gangbuster. But and then the last one is the Omega. They get their own Swiss Guard. He doesn't get infiltration, but they also save 20 points. So
yeah, he's a dirt cheap Swiss Guard.
Yeah, he
doesn't have hidden deployment either, but he's...
That's what I'm saying. He doesn't have hidden deployment, but he still has MIM-6. Sure and does. He's not BS-15. I guess he's BS-14.
They nobody goes all the way to Pan OBS in this list, although they get close. They're like mid-level is higher, but they don't go all the way.
The bottom is where Pano goes, but the top, not quite as far.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those kind of like three, and then all of the different special or mercenaries and stuff that you'll see everywhere. These guys like those mercenaries quite a bit.
Yeah, the Lynx and the Razor give them more midfield options too, and they get a hidden deployment attack piece too, which with the Lynx, I think it is. It's the Lynx, right?
He,
not the Razor.
Yeah, the Lynx is in deployment though. He doesn't have forward anything.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
But he's a hidden deployment sniper, which is nice.
Which is nice, yeah. Which can be surprising. Nice. My thing is that this is again a heavy REM army, and they get access to a REM racer because that's CC27 robots, no joke. When you give the robot a fucking tire iron and he rolls in with his para minus three CC weapon and CC27 and clubs somebody to death, it could be a real big surprise. It also ups his fizz for dodging, which can be really interesting, and increases armor to three, so you get a more heavily armored robot potentially with a massive CC bonus. But it also means that your basic bots can get upped with just ballistic skill for 15 points. But for 12 points, your robot can become terrifying, which I think is really funny.
Yeah. I mean, I said mine, but the fact that they can open up those infiltrator doors and how versatile slash like state inducing Team Sirius is on their own, that's my add on all of the things you said in Starmada with like the Zeta's ability to climb and go kill you, and like the Cyber Ghost's ability to be a decent killer hacker, and like yada yada yada. The change between them and O12 is access to the infiltrating. We're going to set this up right off the get-go.
My overview of that, I think, is that the difference between Starmada and O12 threat-wise is, I think, like you said, the bigger, like the overall mix of like the kinds of threats that are coming at you is going to be the same. But in O12, you're going to get it from more vectors because they're not forming link teams. They're not forming these like blobs of guys. You're more likely to see individual mid-feet, like mid-range priced fighting units and big priced fighting units operating independently. And I find that more scary, honestly, than link teams, because I can predict where link teams are going to be and how they're going to operate, and they have a certain like profile that you can pin them down through. I'm more scared of like individuals like the Omega, individuals like the Razors and the Lynxes, and the, like you said, the whatchamacallit, the Gangbuster, or the Team Sirius. Right, we have these small independent groups that are all really good at doing jobs. And then you add to that access to things like, now you've also got access to Eclipse Smoke, because you can take Hippolyta, who is a great, like, you didn't really have an offensive CC piece before. Now you do. Like, she's expensive. She's 40 points, but she can go anywhere and then punch something in melee with an explosive close combat weapon in CC24 or dodge out of her Eclipse and Berserk.
I honestly think that O12 is a hacking faction. Like, they have other things, like everyone does, but the thing that they do that is to some degree unique to them is how effective and how cheap and how versatile and how many hackers and repeaters they have just everywhere.
And they're less reliant on their hackable troops. There's a lot more meat in this one, right? Like, unless you're taking hackers, a lot of your fighting pieces like Deltas or Lynxes or Razors, they're not hackable all of a sudden. So you can have you can have like hacking support pieces that have things like deployable repeaters, or you can have things like that. Team Sirius doesn't have to be a hacker. You can have your hackers in the backfield, and you can just use that Sirius bot as like a turn zero repeater, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of like, I think you're right. I think they're more resistant to active turn hacking because they take pieces that aren't necessarily as hackable, and because those pieces are spread out.
And well, what I was saying is that like, their ability to inflict like the hacking effects on other players is right up there, like nomad tier ability to be out and starting getting that ball rolling right from the get-go.
For sure. Yeah. Their whip isn't great comparatively speaking, but they have
lots of them.
I was gonna say there's gonna be lots of them. So you're gonna have to face down multiples in the same time, which I think is a power in and of itself that you don't necessarily appreciate until you face it.
So many of their hitters are not Swick dependent.
Yeah, definitely.
So like, if they're like, I got points to spare, let's turn all the Kappas into hackers. Because why not? They don't cost any more. They just cost half a Swick.
Yeah.
Dude, I do that all the time.
The only person I see do it.
Four Kappa hackers. They're all immune to, they've all got six sense. So you can't stealth around them.
Well, they can't link, but
Yeah, you're right. They can't like, but
no. But what they are is if anyone acts, they start fight, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So like your Lynx gets it, your what is it? The remote who has the Riot Stopper gets in a fight, and in part of the Riot Stopper shooting, also every hacker on the board is spotlighting or isolating or obliviny. Like they're doing all of the effects all at the same time because each of them does their own as the arrow.
Yeah.
And you hit them with every status effect in the game. And like, yeah, some won't stick, but some will. And that will ruin somebody's day.
Well, I was fighting against Invincible Army and it was like, oh, Tidbot minus six. Well, I get four rolls, so maybe one will go through.
Yep. Yeah, that's for me, O12, is they're a hacking faction. They're going to status effect the hell out of you. And then they've got a really cool forward deployment model who I find like uniquely capable because of the heavy Riot Stopper and built-in repeater and built-in hacking.
And for me, it's all about those status effects. It's all about the same hypermobility that you have in Starmada and the fact that it's not all clumped up in link teams that's coming at you from different directions. So how do we do, Dan? What do you think?
Yeah, everything's accurate there. Those are all good things. One thing that's really, really good is they have the Alpha, which is a cheap 24-point. It's got a biovisor, martial arts, guard, counterintelligence, courage, BS attack, plus one burst. And it kind of just, it's on a size 4, but you kind of sit back. It gives you the plus one command token and Strategos. And sure so does. So it gives you the option for like the Zeta, for example. Normally you want to bring the Zeta NCO, but you can shave off 4 points to just get the 77.1. That's normal because you got Strategos, so it doesn't need to. Doesn't so it's just like ever. There's those point savings. So really he's only like 20 points at that point.
Mm-hmm. And you have counterintelligence now too, so you're a bit more robust against strategic command token use in the first turn.
Yeah. So if you're bringing the Raptor Killer Hacker is going to NCO, you know, you can take advantage of it. But you don't, if you bring the Alpha, you don't have to worry about wasting that Lieutenant Order. It's just available. So you can use a lot more. Team Sirius is freaking amazing. They're so much fun. You do get a Raven Eye as well, which can be a sneaky Lieutenant. We didn't talk about Cho in Starmada, which I think is a good Lieutenant choice because it can be hidden. And so just going back to briefly, if you see the and even in O12, if there is a Lieutenant that's whip 14, it can only be the Alpha or Cho. So if you don't see an Alpha on the board and they rolled 14, then Cho's invisible somewhere and that's the Lieutenant. Otherwise expect Cho to be invisible as a chain of command somewhere, even if you do kill the Alpha. Mm-hmm. Because the Alpha's not super hard to murder. But it's the same time, it's vulnerable to blasts, right? Go in cheap peace trader that you can't dodge very well with Fizz 10. That's a general thing with O12. It's just Fizz 10 everywhere.
Fizz 12 in the Alpha.
Chain rifles can murder so much of everything in the backline. Just like everything, but just particularly O12. Fizz 10 is just ugh.
And you're a lot of like light armor remotes and stuff too. You've got, if you've got a hacking mate, you probably have Okos and Yokas and stuff. And so you're tending to not be able to dodge and also not really be able to tank that hit if it comes.
Yeah. The Oko, again, both factions, we didn't really talk about it, but I find it's the Oko's the toolbox bot with, it's got the additional order. In this season, and so with climbing plus you can get that repeater kind of on top of buildings and around things, and you know, pick fights with a combi rifle on top of buildings, and so it's
sensor like, out all those
sensor cameras. It can push buttons. It's just kind of like those weird missions where they put the console up on a building, you're like ah, and you're like oh, I'm just climbing plus up it, there's no problem. In this faction we mentioned it, but it's like it's got the hidden deployment. So either the Lynxes or the Razors. The Razor can be a hacker, and so that can lay in wait. I surprise a bunch of people a lot of times. I like putting just one Razor hacker. He's kind of expensive, but just having an infiltrating hacker up there that you don't always know what's hidden, because you have so many options or a few options of hidden models, then they can like walk up with their, you know, toolbox bot to push a button, and you're like, heck, I come out of the, or I come out and total control your tag or something like that. And so it's like, it can really slow down their heavy infantry things, or you just keep them until the end of the game. If they're going second, it's with infiltration, they can just activate, come out of camo, and you're like, well, I discover. And you're like, that's fine. I push the button, and there's nothing you can do about it. And so, like, last turn, pushing buttons, that's available in 012, and absolutely nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, final move, go and do it, hold it, and reserve the whole game.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit pricey to do that, but it's won me a few games, or should have won me a few games if I deployed properly. Gangbuster, I can't speak enough of. I think Team Series is great. I like the Gangbuster more. Just having the mad traps out on the board. Again, there's some things that hard counter it, but like the total immune guys, like the McMurro and stuff. But otherwise, it's just annoying that you have to gum up and you have to dodge instead of walking up and just around where they are. Or you can put them somewhat near the other buttons, right? And so if they're coming to try to push a button, they got to waste another order dodging before they can fall back. But they're going to have to stay out in the open. It just eats orders. When you hit somebody, it's amazing because then they're immobilized. You just, I love mad traps.
And I have another MSV piece. Like there's the option of MSV there with the combi rifle and line layer, right?
For sure. And honestly, I like the killer hacker because it's kind of, you can attack against everything. But even just with the submachine gun, you could have them either end their turn in cyber mask, or you can end their turn in suppression.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's both like annoying to get rid of, especially because they got the MSV and they got the mimetism. And so it's just kind of like just mod stacking. They're just annoying to dig out, and you can just put them on top of buildings and they can just throw out mad traps and just kind of be annoying and try to hack other hackers and stuff. So they're amazing. The Omega, I haven't done a whole lot with, but it's just, yeah, don't want to get into a fight with that thing. It's for how cheap it is. And it's got the armor 4, 2 wounds, then minus 6. Fantastic.
So what's the takedown then, Dan?
What's
the takedown for 012? How do you deal with all this mobility, individual hitting pieces, all the status effects they can throw around?
What kills me? Oftentimes you'll have a lot of kind of backdoor cheerleaders, like the Kappa hackers and that kind of stuff. And they, if you have a dedicated killer hacker, you can kind of just eat them all one by one. They don't, you know, the ARO one dice hack against you. But like if you can get like a repeater up on the side and kind of you can carve them out pretty quick, even if it's going through the firewall through your own repeater. It's just kind of, if you have a dedicated good killer hacker, you should be able to just kill them all. Or like an infiltrating ninja killer hacker, that kind of stuff. So that's scary. That's something I don't want to ever see. Any kind of fast moving camo that has chain rifles. Again, we have some good dodging stuff, but for the most part, no. And so that could just ruin my day so fast.
Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of low armor stuff supporting the high like armor pieces that are your headers.
Yeah, and even the high armor pieces isn't like that super high. There's the gamma, which is kind of like a mini tag at like armor 6 with 2 wounds and no wounding cap. And it's got like a +1 burst on its either heavy machine gun or fear box. So like that's scary. But so yeah, gamma's super cool. And so that can take some hits, right? The chain rifles might not murder him, but and maybe not the alpha, but at the same time, it's probably your best bet against the alpha. It'll add only armor 4. So yeah, just the cheap trade troops just ruined me.
I would say indirect fire is a real strength against O12. They have obvious lieutenants sometimes, like that alpha. You're gonna know if you're going second, if he is or not, if that lieutenant gets used by somebody that isn't an NCO, you'll know that alpha's a lieutenant. And just a grenade launcher or a paratroop or a impersonation fide, or just an impersonation marker that can slip through the net and not have to deal with triggering all the different reactions from all the deployables and all of the like hackers and stuff. you can put O12 into Lost Lieutenant very easily with indirect fire, spec fire grenades, or like slippy pieces that can just get to that vector, especially if someone invests in an alpha. You're gonna know one just by paying attention, like you said, that whip 14 test. And if that extra command token exists, then you instantly know that that's the lieutenant. Then you just go kill that guy. Right.
Yeah. Again, beware of the blue coats, you know.
Sure.
They protect them pretty well,
but blue coats can't protect against spec fire grenades. No, right. Like, no, that's
they die to spec fire grenades.
And he's got armor one and nothing else. There's no wounding cap. There's none of that stuff.
The blue coats are actually one of the most resistant in the faction against spec fire.
They sure are. Because they're good fizz.
Because there's six cents. No, because it's six cents.
Yeah. So they dodge it full fizz.
And they go, get out of the way. I mean, they're still probably going to die, but
they've seen everything, man. During the cannibalism riots on Bakunin, that guy saw everything. That guy's got dead doll eyes.
You don't sneak up on him.
Yeah. He's got that same slow menace that like Skinner had on the X-Files, where you're just like, yeah, this guy's seen some stuff.
But at the same time, they're only fizz 12 or fizz 10. Sorry. So yeah. They'll still die like the rest.
It's better. They'll dodge
better than seven.
Alpha's going to dodge on a 9 and he's going to dodge on a 10.
Still not great.
So going for the throat, honestly, on an O12 list, is you're gonna like there might be a lieutenant choice that isn't whip 14, and you're gonna know. But look for the
Shinobu
signs
in the background. Like it should be able to just like run through everything.
Yeah, and every faction has access to some version of spec fire, even if it's like just McMurro, like slipping through smoke over there and then humming grenades over the wall. Right, or just sacrificing himself. Yeah, just McMurro bodying
this guy. Just a McMurro. Yeah. You know, everyone's got one. Just use your McMurro.
But everybody has like a grenade troop. Everybody has like access to like someone that can do like some kind of indirect fire. You got ghoulie grenade launchers. You got, you know what I mean? Like there's you can long shot and it will pay off huge if you notice the signs that O12 is using like an obvious lieutenant, because that lieutenant's very assassination prone.
Yeah, and that's why Cho, but be aware that if they do bring Cho, which is only 20 points, and like you hide it as something else, probably a blue coat, because no one wants to fight a blue coat. Sure. So yeah, if you're trying to murder them, Cho is probably a blue coat, because one thing.
God.
Because you're like, oh, there's a blue coat in the corner, just hanging out, making sure no one infiltrates on that side. You're like, wait a second, I bet that's his lieutenant.
Yep.
Because otherwise no one would fight. But no, the people don't play Lynx a lot. I don't know why. I think they're really, really good.
The Lynx, not Lynx teams. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, Lynx. Yeah. So with the multi-sniper rifle, you can surprise people. And so like you can, if
did they just, always have if, a plasma carbine profile?
Yeah.
That's a weird profile. Plasma carbine decharges assault pistol specialist. What a weird profile.
It's so good though. Because you can walk up at like the mid minus six, and then you can be like surprise attack assault pistol. And you're like, I don't need it. I got lots of burst. I don't need to. And they're BS-13. They're pretty good. And they got stealth. And with the hidden deployment, you know, that link team comes over around the side and you're like, template. Good luck. I ran BTS saves for everybody.
Yeah, plasma carbine's good suppress.
Ah, that's good. Oh. Carbine.
Oh,
yeah.
It's not a rifle, but, yeah.
The rifle can, but
yeah.
The assault pistol can, I'm pretty sure.
If they gave him a plasma rifle, I'd pay another 10 points for it. I wouldn't care. I'd take it.
Yeah. If you get a plasma rifle, it's baby Hector all of a sudden.
Yeah, I know. It's so good.
I mean, I honestly, with the mimetism and cover, that plasma carbine's still super dangerous.
Yeah.
Right.
What's nice is the Lynx are immune to the templates if they're not on the board. Right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so then they can they're kind of that guaranteed hit back piece, and sometimes they even just like put them as camo markers. You're like, that's fine. Just you can know they're there, and there's no real reason to. Maybe if you go first, you put them as camo markers just so you get the extra orders without having to reveal them. Yeah, just keep in mind that that's kind of possible. And there's always the smoke MSV2 thing that's possible with the Epsilon, which is solid. They just kind of have all the little tools. And so you just got to, I don't know, be prepared. But also, it just healing their backline is one of the easier things to do, I think.
And it pays off really big.
Yeah.
I don't know the number of games that Dan and I have played where I've killed this backline. See where all these are coming in.
Every game.
Template guy dives in. He's going to die. Yeah. Yes.
They're just one of those factions. I think the point we're making is they're one of those factions where a big play like that can pay off because they don't have a ton of lieutenant options. How many do they have? I'm going to sort by lieutenant.
How many do they have and how many do they actually have? They have Cho. And then do you
yeah,
or
I was gonna say, yeah, because it's the Kappa, Alpha, Omega, the Gamma, the Zeta, Hector, which you're gonna know. And then you said Blue Coat and Cho, Saladin.
So and the Raven, the problem with a Kappa lieutenant is it takes a full SWIC, and then you just got a Kappa combi rifle instead of a Kappa hacker. And you're like, I wonder if that's lieutenant or not.
Yeah.
So it's like, so that's obvious lieutenant. So probably don't do that. Cho is a nice one because you can hide her anywhere. And as a lieutenant, she's only 15 points, which is really nice. Blue coat lieutenant is a submachine gun version, which you can take. But so it's
it
like
kind of calls it out though, because you wouldn't, kinda. You wouldn't, so it's you way more expensive points, than you normally take.
But sometimes you have the extra points when you're kind of going around and you just upgrade the blue coat to the submachine gun anyways, because then you can have the cool suppression early on. And then you have a fun suppression rifle, and then if you don't think the suppression is going to hurt them, you sticky them. And so you kind of set it and forget it in the back line kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Just apart from Cho, they tend to have a fairly, I think the point is not what you take, it's what to look out for, right? Yeah. If you see Saladin, he's probably a lieutenant. If you see the
I think
Alpha, yeah,
Saladin has to be a lieutenant.
And if you see a loot, that's right, because there's no other profile, I'm pretty sure, isn't that? Yeah, it's just the only profile there is. And then same with like the Alpha unit, right? If you see that extra command token, he's marked himself as a lieutenant. Like, it's just, what do you recognize? How do you know who this probably is? And if you don't see one of those things, then almost guaranteed it's Cho. One of those other size twos that's in a weird spot that is a double of something is going to be the lieutenant, because it's going to be Cho.
You'll occasionally see the Gamma or the Omega as lieutenant. But it's risky, and so you probably won't see it very often.
If you've got that, then it's Cho chain of command somewhere, right? Yes, like also that, then also that's your hitting piece, and then some random cap is going to reveal itself to have chain of command later on. But either way, the point remains, basically you go for the soft squishy back line regardless of whether or not you know what the lieutenant is, and then look for the hallmarks of who that lieutenant is and try and hunt them down, because they are not very lost lieutenant resistant.
No, there's not a lot of veteran or anything like that.
And it costs you a lot for Cho plus Alpha, right? You're looking at 44 points on your lieutenant option of non-fighting pieces if you're going to make that combo for a chain of command plus the Alpha.
Yeah, but they got a lot of cheap, good options too, right? Like the Kappas are only 12 points. You get a sweet hacker for it.
I think you're always bringing a Strategos lieutenant in this faction. Like, whether it's going to be Hector or it's going to be the Alpha. The Alpha. I don't see why you wouldn't, with Cho existing, like, just do it. Just get the extra orders.
If they want to come kill Hector. Hector's expensive in a fairly.
Yeah, but he's also like he solves the problem of the let's all go dive to kill the lieutenant. Because you go, yeah, you're going first. I spend my token to suppress with Hector. Come, kill me. And like, maybe they will. And then you have your small backup. But it is work to kill suppressing Hector. Like, You're putting your life on the line if you're going to try and go like, yeah, I'll just run into the suppressing cover mimetism plasma rifle.
The X visor is a huge deal. Yeah. The X visor. So the fact that he does not, he's all zero bands when he suppresses, which is
I didn't
even think about that.
Yeah.
He's like, I hit on 10.
He's really good at suppressing.
And you can't.
He also fires that plasma rifle up to 32 on zeros, which is another thing people forget.
And he's surrounded by Raven Eye mines and blue coats. And then on your turn, you're like, okay, now we go. And I have three extra orders on this guy. Did you do it? Did you go all the way to kill my lieutenant? No? Guess I get to kill you now. That's my opinion anyway. Just go
Hector,
big.
Hector is fun. Hector's solid.
But if you want to kill them,
go big. Yeah. Go for a backline assault.
Kill as many as you can.
If you have access to deployment zone paratroopers or parachutists, they are also a nightmare sometimes for these guys. Anyone can get to that backline and go hunting. And then cheap warbands, like if you have access to things like Gakis and Predas or Taiga Beasts or the human equivalent, which is Caledonians, which is Galwegians.
Oh, there's one other. His name is Adelami.
His name is, yeah, but he's not a warband. Coom Rider would be, I think, a better equivalent than Adelami. I'm talking about fast, smoky, get in the zone template weapon.
Weapon? He's got a shotgun. That's a template weapon. This is why Dan's traumatized about templates, because Daylami infiltrates, run into his deployment zone all the time.
Stop! Daylami's great. Daylami's great.
You can't take 4 Viridian cards in vanilla O12.
You can?
And they can duo.
And they can duo. And so you got to be prepared for that, is that there might just be a crap ton of Varangian guards that are taking cover. So they're armor 5 in cover. And they might be guarding things too. So
those little combos, for sure. Like the double mounted...
pretend to be the 5th Varangian guard with
Joe. Double mounted authorized bounty hunter, the Varangian guards. There's a few little things you might see.
Those are kind of standard things you're going to see in most vanilla factions, though.
Mm-hmm. Definitely,
yeah.
some equivalent of it.
This sure is a faction breakdown of this faction.
O12. It's, I think, the fact that they're underestimated because they are like a newer faction. They don't have as much things, but they're still a vanilla faction. They still have access to tons of different kinds of things. They can be played very differently. And like, there was a vanilla O12 player that won the Cold and Carbonite in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say, interestingly enough, too, vanilla doesn't. So I think this is an interesting thing. Is O12 doesn't have a striking strength. They have some very particular things like the status effects and the climbing plus that are kind of like a universal thing that they do, but that's not a striking strength. That's not a thing like
there's no
having there. Access to. There's no Fide. There's no Aquila guard. Exactly. Yeah. Right. But they also don't have a very. They have a very like shallow bottom.
And yeah, they're like not, useless.
it means that their strengths and weaknesses are sort of like very like flat. So there's not a ton to leverage, and there's not a ton to be leveraged either, which makes them, I think, fairly durable. And it makes it, I think, like we just kind of noticed, it makes it difficult to say this is the thing you go do against them. It's more this is what you watch out for, and then here's the things that could happen, and here's some stuff to look out for, because when it does happen, you have an opportunity. Things like this, the alpha is definitely the lieutenant because he's got the 5 command tokens, or he's revealing counterintelligence, or you know, there's a weird cap over there that is probably Joe. Like those are things to look out for, but they're not mechanically strong or weak, if that makes sense. So I think it sounds like this takedown is kind of like just do the stuff you normally do, but that's because this faction in general, I think, doesn't have like a pronounced specific strength or a pronounced weakness, because it covers a lot of bases. It has access to a lot of like a very strong blend of what other factions do really well, but to like a medium level as opposed to like an extreme level.
If I was to say the one thing that I thought was the unit in particular that was a weakness for this faction, it's dogs. Almost sure. More than other factions.
I don't know if that's possible. Dogs are kind of a threat to everybody.
They are a threat to everyone, but these guys in particular have a bit of a lower average fizz, a lower average armor, and a lot of them traded out what would be shotguns and chain rifles for riot stoppers, which do not help you at all against the dogs.
True.
So when the dog comes, maybe like you're playing Pano, or you're playing Hawk Islam, or you're playing Yu Ching, and it's like, oh shit, danger close. Well, whatever, we'll just both template each other, and then at least I can do a wound to it. The Kappa is like, I'm gonna die here. Maybe I'll hit him on my 15, but now I have a failure state and he hits me with 2 chain rifles and I can't really get out of the that's the only thing. If there was one thing that stood out that these guys really don't like facing down, is dogs, in my opinion. Not that they can't counter them, not that they don't have all the tools to do so, but one of the things that they lean so heavy into, which is the hacking and the status effects, is guys like dogs who don't care.
Yeah, that's like all those warband troops I was talking about. Yeah, even Gazis. Yeah. Like TI, they don't like is Gazis. A big thing, though. For sure, but TI, like the same mobility of like smoke and stuff that gets you there. And then being non-hackable, like Gazis can do that. They don't like being jammed. They're not going to like jammers. They're not going to like grenades. They're not going to like a whole bunch of things that those warbands bring. Same with like the Caledonians and the, or the Galwegians, sorry, and the other various warbands, Coom Riders. I think they would, I think the Wonder Twins and Hack would be an absolute nightmare for these guys. They would know what to do. Those two would just go and kill every heavy hitting piece there was. They would just murder Hector in melee.
But the thing is also, you can also just like get in, dodge into the back line, and just sit there and then carry on with the rest of your turn. Because then O12's like, oh wait, how do I kill this person? Because they're going to trade up, up during my turn now. And so you can really just throw away guys into their back line. You don't even have to kill anything. You just get to sit there. And then you're like,
jam it up, make it so you can't move.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a general good advice, but it's just kind of, when that happens, I feel like when I'm playing, I mean, I haven't played much else in O12, but it's just like, I'm like, like, I don't have any cool things to also piece trade, or like, it's you don't have like the super cheap.
A bunch of your tools become kind of nullified when stuff's up that danger close to you.
Yeah, like the cheap guys that trade are like the ranging guard, which are 12, 13 points. Right, there's no 6 point or 8 point or 10 point guys to trade, right? You just don't have access to those, and so it's when they put those 8 point guys in the back line, and you're like trading the 12 point guys, it doesn't feel good.
It's a losing battle. Yeah, you're losing out on that trade for sure. Sweet.
So yeah,
I think we did it. O12. Good job, Dan.
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy, nailed it, just crushed it, did it in one. And now
no one should ever lose the O12. You should be embarrassed if you do.
Beat the absolute brakes off of them, just make them fill their pants every time you play them. So there you go. Well, yeah, thank you very much.
Wonderful advice of kill their lieutenant. Have you tried just killing their models? If you do that, you'll win.
Jesus Christ.
But if you have like the Uxia or the Bidet, how do you stop? It was O12. There's not a good answer.
No, there isn't, for sure. Yeah, that up close and personal infiltration stuff. But yeah, so there we go. We did another one. I want to say thank you very much to our patrons who make this possible. Thank you very much to everybody who's been listening. Thank you very much to came out to Spring Offensive and Winter War, and we'll be back next week hopefully with our next faction takedown, which is going to be Aelith. There it is. Man, everybody.
Screw those aliens, guys. Good night.
Bye.